You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Hadara Bar-Nadav. Hadara, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Hadara, I know we're going to talk about your poetry today, and you're going to read to us a little bit as well. But what are you working on at the moment? Are you currently involved in a manuscript?
I am. I'm involved in a couple of manuscripts. The one that's probably most coherent is tentatively titled The New Death Style. And I'm joking that it's tentatively titled The New Death Style because my last book was called The New Nudity, and I'm not sure I can get away with calling every book The New Something, but there happens to be a title, the title of a poem is The New Death Style, and that's where I'm borrowing it as a book title. This is a book that draws on some of my family history. On my mother's side alone, we had more than 60 family members who were killed in the Holocaust. So I'm sort of looking at the way Jews have been portrayed in literature, media, film, and also looking at this historical, these historical narratives, many of which are lost or fragmented. And I'm also working, I was a medical editor for many years, so I'm also looking at the medical experiments and doing a series of erasures based on the Nuremberg Code and defendants, war criminals who were tried for their medical experiments. I'm looking at their statements and writing erasures based on their statements and, you know, denials that they did anything wrong. For the most part, Jews aren't human.
You're saying you're writing erasures based on the statements? And what
right.
do you mean by
so,
that?
So by an erasure, and there are many different ways, I think, to go about writing erasures, but what I'm doing is looking at their statements from a military tribunal, and it's their final statements. So basically their denials that anything they did was wrong. And I'm taking their text and pulling out words and constructing a poem based upon their language. And so I'm sort of thinking about it. This surprised me. I didn't know how I was going to write about this material that I was researching, but this kind of form arrived to me. And it's kind of fragmenting their narratives. In a way that they fragmented, it sort of mirrors the way they fragmented the lives of those they struck down, who they maimed and killed. So it's I'm not an active, I haven't historically been a very active erasure artist, but this is drawing me into new territory in an exciting way.
Just to be clear, it's a form that I've interviewed other poets about, but it's where you're taking a text often printed on a page and similar to the way things are censored. You're using either a black marker to reveal what's there, or people do it in different ways.
Right.
They simply pull words out of that text and reconfigure them. Are you using a marker and presenting it that way as this kind of visual sort of redaction, or do you pull the words out first?
I pull the words out, but I'm trying to honor where I found them on the page, which I think also honors that fractured energy of the erasure form and also the fractured energy of what was happening with these medical experiments. So I'm not marking out words, I'm circling and underlining words and then trying to honor where they were on the page, as long as, you know, that is coherent.
Right, and that's clear. And I want to talk about some of your poems, but also to begin with, I mean, here you read some of them, but just to ask you a little bit about what you're doing right now, the idea of looking over that testimony and even the Holocaust itself and your family history with it, but in particular, you know, people who performed at the Nuremberg trials, who performed medical experiments. This sounds like some of the most horrific material that you be kind of wading through, you know? And so I often wonder, like how do you even handle that? As an artist, I like to think I can look at a lot of difficult things and deal with a lot of difficult things. At the same time, I intentionally don't read or try not to read any news about Trump because it's so disturbing. And not to compare that at all really to the medical, you know, experiments, but just things that are so disturbing.
Yes.
In some innate part of me just doesn't want to hear, but of course that's what art is about and witnessing. So I guess I'm just asking, how is it that you have the fortitude to kind of go through that? It sounds like psychologically for an artist, for a writer, a very difficult process, especially with your family ties to that history.
Yes. I appreciate you mentioning that. This work has been very psychologically difficult, and I started it about a year ago, and I had to walk away from it entirely because I was starting to get nightmares, and I was having trouble functioning. I was having trouble going from writing for a few hours, researching medical experiments, and then picking up my children from school and just being a mom and a human again. And I was just getting really depressed, and I thought, you know what, this material is dangerous for me. This lens through which I'm seeing humanity is really difficult. And I just took a break. And it's interesting, it's through the erasure form, which actually feels a little bit clinical and keeps me in some ways above the language or above the feeling of it, because I have this form and this technique through which I'm analyzing it. And the weight of it still hits me hard, but it's usually after I've assembled the poem and am reading it in its entirety that I think, oh, my God, what am I doing? Or, oh, my God, what did these people do?
Right.
So I'm practicing a lot of self-care and making sure to take breaks. I work in small, a half hour or an hour at a time, and then I try to focus on something else. If I lock myself into this universe for 8 or 10 hours a day, I would be in trouble. But it's interesting that you mentioned Trump, because that's what called me to this material to begin with. Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, the rise of the alt-right, which is happening throughout Europe, throughout the United States, neo-Nazis, Holocaust deniers. I mean, that is what called me to this material. I'd like to say that it's in history and it no longer exists, but it absolutely exists. I mean, there's so, count the genocides, what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Yemen, you go on and on. And the new death style actually doesn't focus particularly on Jewish culture. It looks to honor killings of young women, unarmed shootings of black men, and how people have a terrifically destructive impulse within them and do terrible things to groups of people. At the same time, I firmly believe that art is life-affirming. This is poem making, art making is the most life-affirming thing I can do as a human, I feel, besides love people and love my children and maybe teach. It's the most life-affirming thing I can do. It makes me feel like I have a tool and a voice in all this.
We like that. I'm glad you said that. And so let's hear one of your poems. What are you going to read to us first?
Sure. I'm going to start off with a poem called Dress, which is in honor of Ambreem Riasat, who was a young woman in Pakistan who was killed in an honor killing for helping her best friend elope. This is from a book called The New Nudity, which came out in late 2017, and it investigates the inner lives of objects. So this is called Dress and also Aurora Borealis. I know I'm giving a lot of backstory here, but the Aurora Borealis piece, it's actually kind of my first Facebook poem or inspired by Facebook. Someone posted these beautiful pictures of the white curtain Aurora Borealis on Facebook, and I thought it looked like a dress cutting across the sky. And it took me to Ambreen's story, which had been with me for some time. So Dress Aurora Borealis. See me for miles, light streaked, death streaked, a disturbance, I am disturbed. Theatrical and skinless, electrical, all edge. A knife of ice carving the sky. White blades, white fathom, unbridled. White that is red, is pink, is hue, is glazed enormity, tangerine plush. And then comes the blood, scarlet on fire. Why is a girl always on fire? What makes her crackle? Breathtaking the cut waist, thighs rushed by smoke, royal of voil, combustible. So I loved, laid, slept for days, blinked, breathed flame, paraded like a god, gianter than God, invincible. Made of nothing at all, fleshless, a fuse of refusals. And am I beautiful now? Who owns beauty? Waiting for your tongues to slip by.
Thank you. That's very beautiful. And that's and what book is that from?
That's from The New Nudity.
And tell me a little bit more about, I guess, that book and the next piece that you're going to read.
Sure. So the new nudity investigates, again, the inner lives of objects, but also body parts. And in part, it is a response to books that I've loved and writers I've loved for years, like Frances Pange and Gertrude Stein and Pablo Neruda, writers who I held, you know, dear. I read Gertrude Stein's Tender Buttons when I was a teenager, and I can barely understand it, but there's such beautiful flickers and colors and uses of syntax and language in there that I've returned to it 1,000 times over the years. And so in some ways, this was kind of my love poem to these writers who had written so beautifully about objects. And then I ironically thought, this will be a break from all my Holocaust stuff and all my family crises and grief, and I'm just going to write about objects. How heavy could you get if you're writing about a door or a diamond?
Right.
And it turns out, you know, a poem is a poem, so all the heaviness and breadth of experience came along with it, and the whole second section of the book ends up being about the Holocaust. So there you go. Art doesn't help you escape. I don't think
right.
My art doesn't help me escape, that's for sure.
And what's the next poem you're going to read?
The next poem I'm going to read is Diamond. This poem is for my father, who was a diamond cutter. Diamond. A diamond that hates diamonds, the dumb glittering of the self in the sun. Glitter during war, glitter during plague, glittering terrazin and electric wire. Geometry is the enemy that wounded him and pretended it was love. A hedge shorn of hair, the object shorn. The diamond ran out of faces, facets, coal, hidden for years in the hem of a stolen coat. I will not trade him for boots, bread, a passport, or the daughter I lost singing to herself on the other side of the dirt. Each generation chained, charred, glittering, born inside an oven of roiling earth, light siphoned from my father's bones, crown of white fire.
Thank you. That was very beautiful. And of course has echoes of the Holocaust there. Though, did you say it was on your mother's side where you lost so many relatives?
Yes, well, it's on both sides. So on my mother's side, my sister has actually done very extensive research. She's gone to Czechoslovakia, and she's been able to track down individuals numbering at least at 60. My father's side is much more spotty, and we're still, unfortunately, counting what the losses were there. In part, this is so difficult because people just disappeared. But to begin with, his own mother lost 11 brothers and sisters. She was the lone survivor of her immediate family. So, and that's just the beginning of that story.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's so unfathomable, really.
It is, in so many ways. It is and isn't. Yeah, it is and isn't, right? I think people are fathoming it again so strangely, you know, and I hear about these ICE deportations and these children taken away from families and then the parents are deported and people are going missing, you know, right now.
And you're going to read one more poem.
I am, and it's slightly more lighthearted. Or
okay.
Perhaps I can say as lighthearted as I get in poems for the most part. This is the last poem in the book. It's called Zombie. A zombie is a head with a hole in it, layers of plastic, putty, and crust. The mindless must be sated, modeled men who will always return, mouthing wet promises. You rise already harmed and follow my sad circle as if dancing on shattered legs. Shoeless, toeless, such tender absences. You come to me ripped in linens and reds, eternal, autumnal, with rust and wonder. My servant sublimate and I am yours, the hot death we would give each other. My dark ardor, my dark auger, love to the very open-mouthed end. We are made of so much hunger.
Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about that poem. You didn't preface that at all, and that seems like a specific relationship of some kind. It's about love, right?
It is. It is a love poem, yes. And it also, this is a poem I would say is loosely inspired by going to the gym and constantly there being zombie shows on. What is it, The Living Dead? And those shows are horrific. They're so violent and gruesome, and I'm sitting there at the gym just trying to exercise, and I, you know, can't take a break. and also for me, you know, I'm writing about objects and body parts, and zombie feels like it's somewhere in between the living and the not living. And but I thought, you know, in some ways, the zombie it's so erotic. Which, you know, I realize is strange, but I'm a poet, so go with me.
I'm with you. Right. I was going to say that because that really is an erotic poem as well, what you just read.
Yes. I mean, there's so much longing. It's you know, mindless, you know, blind intensity. There's such terrific longing, the drive to consume the other, to inhale the other, to be one with the other. And, you know, zombies, they're in terrible shape, right? They're falling apart, and they don't care. They're going for the live meat anyway. And so I started thinking about the strange erotics and the desire piece of zombies and how we, in some ways, are like that. We're sort of blind and running after the thing we want or the thing that we love. I have Years ago, I read something, I can't remember if it was in the New Yorker, about zombie culture becoming popular in times of economic crisis. And that always kind of stayed with me. Oh, zombies are an indicator of economic crisis. So when you have loss, you imagine people eating people. And I thought, well, when you have loss, maybe it's people who are so disconnected wanting to reconnect to people again, wanting to inhale people. You know, I look around at my students, nobody's, you know, before class starts, nobody's talking to everyone, everyone's staring at their cell phones, everyone's looking at their laptops. And I think that in some ways we're so isolated right now. We're super connected and we're super isolated. So when I think of this, you know, uprise in zombie culture, I'm thinking we're desperate to reconnect. We're so alone and so super connected but so physically alone that we want to eat each other. We want to be with people so badly. I mean, why? I don't know. I'm sure there are other reasons why, you know, zombies might have such, you know, relevance right now, but it's so pervasive. And we're at such a, you know, violent time in our history, in our culture. I wonder what the connection is there.
Yeah, that is really curious. It's been wonderful hearing your poems, and I wish you great success on your current manuscript. Is there anything you want to say in closing that I haven't covered? You could plug something that's upcoming. There'll be links in here to your books and other things.
Terrific.
But yeah, is there anything else that you wished I had asked or you want to say in closing?
Well, you'll have that the New Nudity just came out in late November 2017, that though the work that I'm doing now is difficult, and much of the work that artists are doing is difficult, I believe in the end that it's really life-affirming, and it allows room for joy as well as loss and terror and difficult things. But the joy, the life-affirming piece of it is embedded in the art-making piece. I firmly believe that art is a counterbalance to destruction. Creativity is a counterbalance to destruction. So many writers have taught me that and have helped me survive on a day-to-day basis. And I hope I can sort of give that gift to others.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you and hear your poetry.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.